as many of us are hoping that we are in the waning days of the session. Let's see, a couple of things. The four bills that were moving to revenue, we're not going to hear those. We're just going to move those over. No point in wasting your time and, frankly, ours. Senate Bill 1037, we will hear the amendments today, but apparently there needs some more technical fixes, so we're not going to move that today. Oh, and that's correct. We will be hearing 1037 at 2 o'clock. Precisely. Let's see what else. Open a public hearing on work session on Senate Bill 1057. Senator Przanski, why don't you come on forward? And Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. Senate Bill 1057 requires a person that owns or uses personal information to notify individuals and consumer reporting agencies when there is a breach of security relating to that personal information.
Thank you, Senator Przanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House Bill 1057, what we have is the -7 amendments, which I believe have been provided to your council and hopefully distributed. What we've done, we've taken the bill itself as it has been originally introduced and basically stripped out all of the provisions with the exception of what is known as the security freeze, which applies to credit reports that are maintained and, brought together by three different organizations. And what we're trying to do is allow for the consumer to have what I call the tool into the consumer toolbox to fight ID theft. Under this bill, what it would allow is an individual who chose to put a security freeze on their credit reports could make that known to the three companies that provide these records and actually perform the credit reports and actually require them to put a freeze, which would mean that any individual that was attempting to establish new credit line on this individual's information would be prohibited from doing so without having the authorization of the individual whose report it actually belongs to. What we have set forth and under the different sections of the bill, Section 1 does the definitions. Number 2 talks about the consumers being able to put a freeze. All of them would be able to do that. It does have provisions for who would actually be able to receive that information, even though a freeze may be in place. And that's important because current and previous creditors would still have access to it. Collection agencies, court orders, if there's a pre-screen list under the Federal Fair Credit and Reporting Act, they would also have access. This would not impact anyone's existing credit creditors' ability to have access to that information. That does have provisions in there as to how a freeze can be lifted for a short period of time or actually removed. There are fees that are required from the consumer if they are lifting or temporarily or on a permanent basis the freeze, or if they have lifted it and they want to replace it, they have to also pay for that. This is the other part that we had some issues with from some of the opponents was the type of remedy that might be available. The bill currently in the drafts, the -7s, provides for a private right of action only. It does not have anything tied to the unlawful trade practices. And at this point, we were presenting the bill at this point, so we could actually move the bill that would actually, again, allow the consumer who chooses to do so voluntarily to freeze their account. And what I would, question I would pose to the committee, who shouldn't be able to control the destiny of their credit card? And this is what this bill does.
So, Senator Przanski, how do you deal with the situation as a consumer's put a freeze on, they go to purchase a car, some people didn't necessarily make the connection, you know, and they want to purchase that car at that moment, how would that person address that issue?
When there is a freeze place, there's a requirement that either an ID, it's PIN number, such as what you have with an ATM debit type card, mm-hmm. or a password would be given to the individual. They would just need to utilize that to, again, lift the freeze for either a temporary basis for an individual creditor or for a period of time, and then it would go automatically back in, or they could just take it up completely. There's also, if you look at some of the reports, they have on their internet system. If someone should actually lose their PIN number or ability to access, how they can actually go through that process. What I would tell the chair and other committee members, this is something that the consumer will be advised, because there's actually a requirement that when a freeze is placed, they receive certain information as to what it may mean as to having some delay and getting credit issued.
Yeah. Okay. I can't remember my next question. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the amendments? All right. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1057. The chair would open a work session on Senate Bill 1057. Senator Ringo, did you wish to review your amendments?
Briefly.
Okay. All right.
Are you?
I'm going to close the work session. It's okay. We'll come back to it. Let's move into a work session on House bills. The bills we're going to move to revenue. Can I do them all in block? Okay. Chairman, open the work session on House Bill 2089, House Bill 2234, House Bill 2514, and House Bill 3143. Chair would move 2089, 2234, and 2514, and 3143 to the Senate Revenue Committee. Any discussion?
The following three bills.
Four.
I know. I'm just reading the agenda.
Oh, the agenda. Got it.
Easy.
Okay.
Four.
Noted.
Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Let's go into work session on Senate Bill 660. Ms. Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 660 requires county boards or boundary commissions to approve petitions for the formation of special districts if the petition meets the requirements that are enumerated by statute. My understanding is that this is an attempt to make sure that county boards and commissions adhere more closely to the statutory criteria that are in existing law.
All right. I'm going to see if I need to have three amendments.
Yeah, there are three amendments. Right. Everyone has it.
Okay. Would someone like to come up and just give us some substantive testimony on the three amendments?
Did you have amendments?
Okay.
Just a couple seconds.
We won't move anything without you, Senator Atkinson.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I'm here today representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Ms. Harris has provided you with an excellent summary of what this bill accomplishes. This bill was introduced by Senator Shields on our behalf in order to, frankly, just clarify the law, and that's what was understood, widely understood, is that formations that meet criteria of the statute can be either approved or, if necessary, sent to the voters to be voted on. And so this bill is a real simple bill, just a clarification of statute. In Senate General Government, there were concerns over the way the original bill was drafted. It was felt that it could be interpreted to reduce or eliminate the some of the authority of county commissions, and so Clackamas County had some objections. We decided to, the bill was sent here to your committee so we could have some time to work out compromise language with Clackamas County. We have done that. The three amendments that are before you have been very carefully negotiated, and every single word is perfect. So I would be happy to go through some more substantive explanation of the threes if the committee would like that, but I won't take your time if it's not necessary.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
It just lends credence to the idea that perfection comes from flatness.
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Can you just answer for me, will this make it easier to form special districts, or will this create some additional hurdles for forming special districts?
Senator Brown, Senator Ringo, we believe that actually it should make it exactly the same, because we believe that this was the process in law previous, and that what we're doing is just clarifying that you have to meet all the statutory hurdles, but that a petition cannot be denied for extra statutory reasons that are not within the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you. Answered any more questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Rich. I'm going to close the work session. Wait, Senator Atkinson to join us. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1074. Okay, all right. Senator Brzozowski, why don't you come on up for a work session on Senate Bill 1074.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. 1074 is a bill that has been before this committee before for a public hearing. We're in work session now. There are two amendments that have been given to you for your consideration. I will briefly walk through those for your convenience. On the dash three amendments, that would basically provide that you take the existing bill, 1074, and there'd be basically two changes. One would be a technical language change on the bill, and what that would be is on the last page of the bill, page four, it would modify or change the terms annual budget to fiscal year. May not exceed the 10% of the city's general fund budget. The difference between the general fund budget and the annual fund budget is the general fund budget is the specific amount that is raised for our general operation of the city. The annual budget is a much greater number. In this particular case for the city of Coburg, it's estimated that the general fund budget is approximately $1.2 million. The annual fund budget is $6 million. So you can see that when you start talking about percentages of the two, you get a significant difference as to what the amount would be. The purpose the 1074 as written and with the dash threes would maintain what is known, I guess, lack of better terms, a moratorium on the city receiving any revenue from traffic citations that are issued on Interstate 5 for a one-year period. This is part, therefore, because of the past practices of the city, and I will go over that in a second. The other amendment is the dash 5. This is one that I've been working on with officials from the city of Coburg. They have not agreed to a compromise, but this was a compromise. What I want to do is leave for the committee a decision to make as to whether they think the dash threes, which would be a moratorium, not receiving any revenue for a one-year period, and then coming back into the system and receiving up to 10% of the general fund, or under dash five, there would not be a moratorium, but instead would have an immediate reduction as the amount of money that they can receive from the revenue that are from traffic citations on I-5. That would be limited to 8% of their general fund. Now, I think it's important to bring the committee's attention that when the original bill was written, it was written with a two-year moratorium. Based on the discussions I've had with the city of Coburg, and I know their attempts to change some of the ways from going from a city that was relying on up to 50% of the general fund revenue coming from citations that they were issuing, I resubmitted Senate Bill 1074 with only a one-year moratorium and the 10% cap. The dash five, as I mentioned to you, would be no moratorium with an 8%. It's worth noting that when we reviewed the information that was given to us from the League of Cities, Oregon Cities, it was determined that the average amount that the cities that reported that were relying on general fund budget revenue from traffic citation or enforcement was 4.1%. So the dash fives provide for double the average of what the cities in the state are basically receiving. Now, I will tell you that when you look at the reasons for this bill to still be in play and coming forward, when we had the law that was in effect prior to the passage of some legislation in 2003, it came to my attention through the state police and others that the city was utilizing their municipal court to handle citations that were not in their jurisdiction, not inside their city limits. And what we there was a report, actually an article that was written in the Oregonian back in December of 2004, which set forth a few pieces of information which I think are important in showing why this bill is coming forward. It states that the city of Cobourg has basically in 2003 had issued $1.4 million in tickets, and they issued more tickets than Eugene, Springfield, and Lane County departments combined. Further, that during the from the period of 2000 to 2003, the public safety budget climbed from $415,000 to more than $1 million in a basically a three-year period. There was in the last half of 2003, and I think this is the important part of, if you remember in 2003, we had two pieces of legislation that was passed to clarify what was already the existing law and also to limit cities from taking cases into their municipal courts when it was outside their jurisdiction. After that law was passed, I was contacted by then the mayor and asked when it was going to affect. I told them that it had a standard implementation date, which was January 1 of 2004. The last 6 months of 2003, they wrote 3,913 tickets. They basically doubled up their tickets, and the Oregonian reports that the Cobourg cops were issuing 22 tickets per day in that last 6 months and racking up a little more than $1 million. Basically, what they were attempting to do was bring in as much money as they could before they thought that they were going to be required to comply with the law that was already the law. Lastly, there are two other points I'll bring out to you. After the annexation took place, which was in November of 2004, in the first 9 days after annexation, they stopped 97 drivers and wrote 107 tickets, topping $26,000 in a within a nine-day period. And calculated by the Oregonian, if they continued on that rate, that would mean that they would have issued more than $1 million in traffic citations on I-5 that year. So what we're trying to do is get them to stop relying on the amount of revenue that they currently are relying on. And give you a summary on that. Again, prior to 2003 or through 2003, it was 48 to 50%. And it's currently, based on my discussions with the chief of police, somewhere around 25%. And as I mentioned to you, the average for all the cities in the state that have reported is only 4%. Again, what I've attempted to do is make sure that they have some type of a cushion through this compromise that I offer to them that at this point they have rejected, and said that if you take 8%, that's still double the state average, and hopefully you'd be able to provide some services. It should be noted that they asked their voters in a survey what they wanted as top priorities. I-5 enforcement was the least. Second, they asked them to go with a levy to support additional money for running a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week police department. They're a city of less than 1,000, and it was rejected resoundingly by the voters. And instead, what they're wanting to do is bring in over $300,000, 25% or greater of their existing budget for the 2005-06 year through traffic fines. I'm asking this committee to help them help themselves to break away from this, and I will stand by whatever decision this committee would make as to adopting the dash threes, which would be a moratorium for 1 year, and then they get to come back in the system, or the dash fives, where there'd be no moratorium, but there'd be a cap. Both of those would be effective July 1 of this year.
Okay.
Questions for Senator Brzezinski, Senator Shields.
Senator, whenever you said that 8% is double the average city, is that all cities or small towns of similar size, or 4% is average for, I mean, if you toss in the huge cities, I would think it would bring it down a lot more because the really big cities have such a broad base.
Yeah.
Can you clarify?
I can, Madam Chair and Senator Shields. What that number reflects, they put out an inquiry to all cities through the League of Cities, and the ones that reported that included all size of cities, including Eugene. I don't remember if Portland was in there. Portland does theirs through the circuit court. They don't have a municipal court. So I can't remember if theirs was in there or not. But those cities, you're right, there's some that were reporting less than 1%. The highest, besides Coburg, the highest was only 16%. And if, for clarification, at the time of that, they were up to 48% or maybe even greater. And so all we did is we just, based on the numbers that were reported from the cities, we just took and just did a mean average of the numbers as they were reported. Again, that was based on the general fund, and that's, I think, the most important part for the committee. When I had the bill originally drafted, I misunderstood as to what the budget included, and it originally had annual fund. Annual fund, if you allow that to go forward, basically they're status quo. They will be able to bring in at least $300,000, if not, in fact, under the general fund formula, they could actually bring in $600,000 because their annual fund is $6 million as compared to $1.2 on their general fund.
Senator Shields.
Yeah, follow up. Part of this is kind of what I would consider corrective action. Part of it seems somewhat punitive and kind of reminds me, and I think you'd appreciate just having said on the Interim Committee on General Government, kind of reminds me of SAFE, where, you know, we kind of are punishing the administration of Brenda Brockland for the sins of the former director, Kathy Keene. You know what I'm saying? A lot of officials and so on have changed. The police chief and who had that conflict of interest is gone. You know, how do you respond to that comparison that keeps popping up in my head?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Shields, what I would say is that there is a punitive part here. The reality is they have not gotten the message that this legislature attempted to give to them 2 years ago. And, in fact, they are still relying much heavier than any other community in this state on revenue off of the freeway, and it takes away, in my opinion, the discretion of officers to as they apply the law. It should be noted that the city of Coburg had, if it doesn't still have, the highest per capita of officers than any city in the state, and clearly under the 2003-2004, actually the highest in the nation. If the city of Coburg and their citizens want to have 24-hour coverage 7 days a week, just like any other city that has that, they should pay for it. There's no city that size, under 1,000, that provides that level of service.
A final question.
Senator Shields.
I'm kind of caught between two people that I consider friends, two senators. Have you talked to Bill Morissette lately about this?
I have. Senator Morissette and Madam Chair, Senator Shields. Senator Morissette and I have talked two or three times. I expressed the issues and the ways that I thought this could be worked. He asked me to work with the city. I've worked with the city. I've met with the chief of police at least twice, if not three times in person since the bill was before this committee. We had a conversation as recent as today with one of the city councilors. We also had about a 40 to 50 minute conversation by telephone, myself, the chief, the mayor, and a couple of other city administrators. And what I put before you is what I thought I heard this committee ask for, is looking at some way of trying to compromise. I understand the situation that they find themselves in, and the reliance, it's unfortunately not healthy, and from individuals I've spoken with within the law enforcement community, the reaction has been either cut them off completely or bring them down softly. I think Senator Morissette has given me his his acknowledgement that I should come forward. He understands why I'm doing this, and we've left it at that. And I know his aide is here, and probably he's going to give some type of statement for the senator, but my conversations with him, he basically acknowledged what I was doing, and he did not oppose me going forward, as long as I took the time to meet with the chief of police and the mayor, and I believe I've done that on multiple occasions.
Other questions for Senator Brzezinski?
Thank you. Mr. Bischoff, did you want to testify on behalf of Senator Morissette? Is there anybody here from the city of Coburg here?
She's back there.
I'm sorry. Come on forward, please. Come on. We won't bite today. All right, Mr. Bischoff, go.
Chair Brown, committee members, Senator Morissette couldn't be here this afternoon. I'm Don Bischoff, legislative assistant to Senator Morissette. City of Coburg is within the senator's district, and he's quite interested in trying to look out for the city as well as look out for the interests of the state. He appreciates the efforts of Senator Brzezinski to work with city officials in coming to some agreement and hopes that they still could be successful in some way. The point he wants to make to the committee is that he believes some recognition must be given to the fact that Coburg has a new mayor, new police chief, a new city administration, and appears to have turned over a new leaf in terms of its past over-enthusiastic enforcement along I-5. So rather than penalize the city for past policies of people who have been disappeared, shall we say, from present-day Coburg, he asks that the new order be given a chance to prove itself and the city be given time to get its financial house in order. The city's financial problems are not all related to the traffic fines issue. The city ran into some bad bookkeeping by past city treasurer and is trying to dig itself out of that hole. According to conversations the senators had with the city officials, they need a couple of years to dig themselves out of that hole and to phase themselves out of their over-reliance. So the senator asked that whatever final form SB 1074 takes, that it give some recognition to that. He is, and I think he's expressed this to Senator Brzezinski, flatly opposed to a moratorium, whether it's a 1 year or 2 year, because he believes that would be overly punitive. Finally, as someone who drives the freeway regularly, Senator Morissette believes that active and fair enforcement of the speed limit and other traffic laws along I-5 is a good thing for traffic safety and should not be discouraged by any police department, especially at a time when there aren't enough state police to do the job. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief Bosley, I understand that you're opposed to the bill. Just want to get your thoughts on the dash threes or the dash fives, if you have any.
Is it my understanding that dash three would leave the moratorium in place?
Yes.
Well, I'm opposed to any moratorium on the city of Coburg.
Okay.
Due to its punitive nature. I just have not been able to identify, after speaking with Senator Brzezinski, what the city has done wrong. In terms of dash 5,
that's the 8%.
Senator Brzezinski and I, through our conversations, we agree on a lot more than we disagree. I understand his point in terms of this whole issue. The only thing I would add on dash 5 would be the 8% cap. If speed enforcement is an issue in terms of the financial gains that are gained out of that, I think the effort should be made statewide instead of targeting one town where, in the study done by the League of Oregon Cities, there are towns identified at 10 to 16%. And why Coburg's being pointed at and saying, they're going to be at 8. That's my only thought.
Any questions for the chief? Sarah Shields.
I have just one question. Senator Morissette's final paragraph said that he believes that fair and active enforcement of speed limits anywhere on the I-5 is a good thing for traffic safety. You don't stop anybody under 80 miles an hour?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, that's correct. I have a list during in 2003 when the original statute was clarified, and that law took effect January of 2004. From January 2004 to November of 2004, November is when the annexation was completed, we issued 1,095 citations on I-5. And this summary shows the citations that went to Central Lane Justice Court as well as Lane County Circuit Court. And all of these citations are for in excess of 80 miles an hour.
And this was in the 65 mile an hour zone.
And I've got all the violations by type that were cited in that period.
Any other questions for the police chief? Sir, and I'm sorry, your name?
Bill Judd, council member for Coburg City Council. Have just a couple points, Madam Chair, for me. I believe, and the Council of Coburg believes, the reason for this bill basically started out being punishment for bad acts, which you've heard and probably discussed through the committee, and we have a real concern of that for one of the reasons that Senator Shields brought up. It's a new day in Coburg. You've heard that. We've used it enough times. What we feel is the bad acts have gone, and we've stepped on. Senator Posansky, during our conversations, brought up a couple of times that the problem is where Coburg is providing services to the citizens that we cannot afford. And I just wanted to bring up our thought on that is the citizens of Coburg are pleased with the police service they're getting because it is a good service. I believe that anybody within Lynn County, is pleased with the services they're providing because they are out on the freeway. They're slowing down the traffic. They're citing criminals. We are prosecuting people in the Coburg Municipal Court that wouldn't be prosecuted elsewhere in Lane County. We've received letters saying there's a number of crimes that they're not going to prosecute. Coburg is able to prosecute some of those. So we feel we are providing a service not only for Coburg, but for everybody that travels up and down I-5. And our fear is if the bill goes ahead as proceed, then we will lose the ability to patrol. We'll lose the ability to have the courts, which are, in fact, protecting a lot of the citizens.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Councilman, how do you lose the ability to patrol?
Either way versus the moratorium or the reduced amount that the bill would allow us to withhold, we would have to make some cuts in the police department. You know, it's a bottom line. And and in our mind, that affects everybody that travels I-5. You know, to us, it's really not a money issue. It's a protecting the citizens issue.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us. I'm going to close the work session, public hearing on 1074. Let's go back up to Senate Bill 60. I'm going to go back up to Senate Bill 60 for a work session. 660?
Right.
Okay. Did I get the number wrong? The chair would move the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 660. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. Chair would move the Senate Bill 660 to the Senate as amended to the Senate floor for due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing nothing. So ordered. Senator Shields, you'd like to carry? It's all yours.
Well, I sent it to you yesterday.
All right. All right. Go back up to down to work session on Senate Bill 1057 with the -7 amendments. Mm-hmm.
Chair would move the dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 1057. Any discussion? Any objection?
No.
Okay. So ordered. I'll call the roll next time around. Chair would move Senate Bill 1057 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Would you please call the roll, Katie?
No.
Senator Rico?
Aye.
Senator
Shields? Aye.
I vote no and serve notice of a possible minority report member.
Thank you. Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Senator Brzezinski will carry on the Senate floor. Close the work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1082. Mr. Mason? What are you here? Mr. Nelson, do you want to come up?
Everybody's fine now.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mike Mason could not be here. I did talk to him on the phone. We thought yesterday that we had reached a compromise, in reflection, ICNU felt that we couldn't move forward with that compromise, and I relayed that to you, Madam Chair, this morning. I told Mike that we would inform the committee of that. We will still be in opposition to the bill, and we understand it's going to move forward, and we were sorry we couldn't reach a compromise.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate your hard work. Hang on. Before you leave, we've got a number of questions. Senator Farioli, then Senator Atkinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a strong advocate for ratepayers' rights, I find myself fairly conflicted as a strong advocate for federal rights, and particularly the proponents of this piece of legislation. Relative to the compromise, is the compromise that was offered to make the opportunity for other cogeneration owners to participate in the same program?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, yes, that was the compromise, and I had actually gone ahead to move forward on the amendments, as I think I indicated to several of you. But on reflection, we felt that we were simply shifting it to a different class of industrial and other ratepayer customers. That if, in fact, one of our industries put a plant together that was not working at market rates and we were there transferring that obligation on to other ratepayers, we were violating the very same principles that we were advocating here before you in opposition to the bill. So that was the reason we pulled back.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Senator Atkinson.
That was my question. It just seems so logical to make this go to the entire, to take off the tribal definition and let this go statewide, as it were.
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, as the amendment was drafted, it would have allowed other co-generators dealing with the biomass to effect approach the PUC with the same kind of proposal to have the utility accept the project, to have it be built into the rates and have it spread to all three classes of customers. But again, in reflection, we would be taking, let's just say we had four other co-generators that were in the same kind of position. We would be transferring their over-market cost to the other classes of ratepayers, and that's exactly what we were arguing against before you. So we just felt in contemplation that we couldn't do that.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. My understanding of the original, when the bill was originally on the Senate floor, is that there was an agreement made between both sides with understanding the bill would go back to committee, come back in a form that would reflect that agreement. I appreciate the fact that on further consideration, your folks have decided that they can't go there.
Madam Chair, and I may be mistaken, but we, at least not that I was part of, did not agree to an amendment that would make this thing work. As you indicated the other day, we tried to go back and hammer out something that would work, but we failed to do that.
Right, and that was simply my understanding at the time. So, Senator Shields?
Yes, in that, all that deliberation, are you, did they, your folks discuss the benefit of cleaning up the forest floor, you know, that beneficial aspect of it relative to forest fires and so on?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Shields, that's correct. We have discussed that. But again, we do not believe that is proper use of electricity rates for that purpose. In other words, we just simply don't believe that we should be subsidizing in our rates and residential customers as well as commercial customers a generating plant that is not operating at market. We, again, have said over and over, we laud the purpose. We just don't believe it's something that should be paid for out of everyone else's rates. We believe that there are other more proper areas to go, and that's we have shoved very hard the whole issue of the energy trust, and the tribes have finally gone there. We believe there are applicable tax credits that are more appropriate to subsidize this activity.
All right. Anybody else wishing to testify on the ones, the twos, or the threes to Senate Bill 1082? Okay. I'm going to close the work session. And if folks want to, I'm going to give you guys a few minutes if you want to talk about moving the twos or the threes. The chair had intended to move the dash ones, but I'm willing to have a conversation about the twos or the threes. You guys want to have a conversation? Do you want to?
What do you want to do?
Think about it.
Let's think about it for a few minutes.
Okay. That's totally fine. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's go down to 2233. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2233. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. House Bill 2233A provides that judgments in criminal actions containing restitution awards won't expire until 50 years after the entry of judgment.
Thank you. Mr. Neely, Mr. Boss.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Fred Boss. I am Assistant Attorney General and Chief Counsel of the Civil Enforcement Division of the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 2233A. House Bill 2233A is proposed by the Attorney General's Restitution Reform Task Force. This is a task force composed of all stakeholders in the restitution process. This bill extends the period of time for collection of restitution judgments from 20 years to 50 years. This bill would increase the likelihood that a victim of crime will be fully compensated for their loss. Many defendants are young when they commit their crimes. If the defendant is in their mid-teens or their 20s when the crime is perpetrated, they would be reaching their earning capacity just when the judgment is expiring. There's also a benefit for the defendant. Currently, the defendant is allowed to petition the court for a payment schedule if he is unable to pay the full amount of restitution judgment. This bill would allow greater flexibility for the judge in setting payment terms and allow smaller payments over a greater period of time. I urge you to pass this bill.
All right, Mr. Neely.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Neely, Oregon Department of Justice, representing Attorney General Hardy Myers. In addition to what's been described to you by Ms. Harris and Mr. Boss, there's one other small amendment that we slid into this bill on the House side. And what it does is authorize the United States Attorney's Office to access the employment records from the State Department of Employment. Right now, they don't have the authority to do that. In doing so, they gain access to one of the key tools to collect civil and criminal restitution at the federal level. and that is wage garnishment. We worked closely with the Department of Employment to ensure that we did this in a way that didn't cost the state a penny. In fact, it's going to gain pennies for the state. All of the money that's collected through federal restitution goes back into VOCA, the Victims of Crime Act, and that money is distributed to the states on a, I'm not really sure exactly what the basis is that it comes back, but again, the better the tools are for the U.S. Department of Justice to collect restitution, the more money that comes into our victims of crime programs. I know of no opposition to, in fact, this bill in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks for bringing this very straightforward measure to us. Close the public hearing unless anybody else wishes to testify on 2233. Let's open a work session on House Bill 2233. Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Oh, we can't do that. Okay, well, we're going to close the work session.
We have dash six.
Thank you. Okay. Conflict amendments. So, there we have.
You. Yes.
Okay, that's good.
And we're a gavel away.
Chair would move the dash six amendments to House Bill 2233. They are conflict amendments. Don't panic. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. So ordered. Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. So ordered.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
I move that we replace your gavel with a heavy hammer.
I think it's heavy enough, Senator Shields. All right. Who'd like to carry? Senator Ringo, you think we can handle that one?
Fine.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's okay. We'll just do that. Okay. Whenever you come back, we'll put it on. Okay. Let's open a public hearing and work session on House Bill, public hearing only, on House Bill 3145. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3145A is a bill that we heard before in April, and I think the parties are here again with amendments. This was the bill that assigned responsibility for information systems security to DAS. There were some state agencies that were concerned about the obligations that the bill would impose upon them, and so I think we have some amendments that might address those concerns.
Okay. Anybody wishing to testify on House Bill 3145 since no one has signed up?
Yeah,
why don't you come on up?
Here comes the two, she'll black your other eye.
Here we go.
All I was trying to figure out was how could somebody's elbow get up that far?
I fell, not surprisingly. Have you met Kristen? She's pretty tall. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, Kevin Neely.
And she's right-handed, too.
She is, or wrong-handed sometimes. Kevin Neely, representing the Oregon Department of Justice, Attorney General Hardy Myers. I'm going to discuss with you the A3 amendments to House Bill 3145. The A3 amendments are amendments that were negotiated between the Office of the Attorney General, the Secretary of State's Office, the Treasurer, and DAS. Essentially, what they do is add a second major section to the bill that would give the Secretary of State, the State Treasurer, and the Attorney General sole discretion over the security of their own information systems. The reason for this amendment is largely that those statewide elected officials are independently accountable to their constituencies. They want to have the principal role in determining whether or not their systems are safe. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Neely. I had a plethora of House members come to see me about this bill, sort of in unison and then individually. Is the House receptive to these amendments? Has anybody had any conversations? Oh, this is going to be... Yes, okay.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure. Again, we work with DAS on these amendments, and it's not clear to me whether or not DAS has discussed these amendments with the other side.
All right. Well, we'll keep the ball rolling and see what happens, whether it gets smacked or it gets passed forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the Dash A3 amendments to House Bill 3145? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 3145. The chair would move the Dash A3 amendments to House Bill 3145. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. So ordered. Chair would move the bill to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. So ordered.
You want to carry it?
Okay. Senator Farrioli has volunteered to carry this bill. Why are people laughing? All right. Thank you very much.
I can read the public statement.
You'll do anything. You're just looking for a bill to read that statement, aren't you?
I got one coming.
I'm sure you do. Which is why. All right. Senate Bill 466. Ms. Harris, we have amendments to Senate Bill 466.
We do. We have an amendment that replaces the measure, actually.
I think it's technically known as a gut and stuff.
Well, I don't like to say those things on the record, but yes, that's correct.
One you just had?
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
May I vote on the two that I was in the hall for?
Oh.
All right. Do this. I'm right out there.
I know. But it's like...
Yes, let him vote.
I am.
Let him vote.
All right.
Madam Chairman, you could convene the meeting in the hallway.
Correct. All right. The chair would ask for unanimous consent to suspend the rules to reconsider the votes by which we took House Bill 2233 and House Bill 3145.
Without objection.
So ordered. The chair would move House Bill 2233 as amended with the Dash 6 conflict amendments and House Bill 3145 as amended.
And we are in work session, Madam Chair.
Yes. Thank you. House Bill 3145 with the Dash 3 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Farrioli and Senator Atkinson, how do you wish to vote?
Aye.
On both bills.
On both bills.
Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I didn't realize I'd missed anything.
You missed one. 2233.
Madam Chair, if it will not change the outcome.
It will not change the outcome.
I understand.
So long as you're not going to file a minority report. All right. So ordered. Senator Ringo was carrying 2233. Senator Farrell is carrying 3145. Thank you. All right. We're back on Senate Bill 446. Ms. Kotek, Ms. Representative Hunt. Is Senator Montes Anderson coming down for this? No. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Brown and members of the committee. This bill, the original bill number, will look very familiar, but I do want to note what the committee administrator noted, that the Dash 12 amendments before your complete replacement of the original bill and apparently the Dash 1 through 11s. And so this is really a focus on looking at the issue of uninsured children in Oregon. As you are well aware, we've got a lot of uninsured kids in Oregon, about 105,000 uninsured children. The real tragedy of that is about 67,000 of those kids qualify for current insurance programs, much of which, as you are well aware, involve significant matchup from the federal government. This bill is really a very small step forward to say, let's go where the kids are. Let's focus on schools, public schools, where these children are enrolled, going every day. today, and in most cases don't have access to information about the health insurance programs that are available. It's a very simple bill, really building toward a long-term solution that would require OMAP to give information that they already have developed, information that they've already developed about OHP and the Children's Health Insurance Program, to give that to every school in the state, and that's every school in the state would be required to provide that at least once a year to each child within their schools. As you, who are parents and grandparents, are well aware, there's plenty of stuff that comes home from kids every year, especially near the beginning of the year. That's why OSBA is supportive of this, because they know that this can be one additional piece of information that they make sure they put in the hands of kids at least once a year. As you'll hear, Children First for Oregon and the Oregon Health Action Campaign and lots of healthcare groups are supportive of this as well. Again, not as the long-term solution, but as one small step on the road toward ensuring our kids. I would urge your support.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kotek.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tina Kotek, Policy Director with Children First for Oregon. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to improve the lives of kids in the state. We're supportive of the Dash 12 amendment. As Representative Hunt noted, we really do have a crisis in the state in terms of the number of uninsured children. It is on the rise, at least 12%, probably more, over 106,000 kids, and many of them eligible for CHIP and OHP. Schools are a great place to make that connection with those families, and we also know if our kids don't stay healthy, they're not going to learn very well. So there's a lot of good reasons to support this amendment, and we don't believe once a year is too much to ask of the schools to just talk about OHP or CHIP. So thank you.
Senator Shields?
Just a comment. I have a sister who's been a kindergarten school teacher forever. If she had this bill, she wouldn't just send it home with the kids. Her kindergarten kids, she'd pin this paper on their coat. Good bill.
Yeah. I think some legislators need a note pinned under their coats when they go home, Senator Shields. Senator Farioli.
No comment, man.
Are you going to say the same thing?
No comment.
Anybody else? Thanks.
Madam Chair, I might also just thank, I know that Senator Ringo and Senator Bates have been working on the original bill, so I appreciate their willingness to let go of the vehicle for this worthy purpose.
And Madam Chair, this was our medical malcompromise bill, and maybe we can, instead of doing a gut and stuff, we'll just stuff it and... No, I'm only kidding.
Thank you, Senator Ringo. I appreciate your willingness to move, to not kick a dead horse when it's down. Okay, thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify on the Dash 12 amendments to Senate Bill 446? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 446. Does somebody want to go and scream in the hall for Senator
Atkinson?
I'll do it.
Thank you. I'll be
screaming in the
hall.
I assume he's not.
Madam Chair. Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
I move the Dash 12 amendments to Senate Bill 446.
Senator Ringo's moved the Dash 12 amendments to Senate Bill 446. Discussion? Objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. Senator Ringo.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 446 as amended to the Senate floor with a passed recommendation.
Senator Ringo moves Senate Bill 446 as amended with the Dash 12 amendments to the Senate floor with a passed recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. Senator Shields, did you want to carry the true bleeding heart of the Senate? Literally and figuratively, at least, this session. All right. Let's go back up to Senate Bill 1082. We're in work session. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, move the Dash 3 amendments.
Senator Farioli would move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1082.
Comment?
Yeah. Sure.
Madam Chair, I believe the tribes, my information is that the tribes support the Dash 3 amendments.
Okay. That's my understanding. Senator Ringo.
Well, Madam Chair, that was my question. It's your belief that the tribes support the Dash 3 amendments?
That's my understanding.
And the Dash 3 amendments apply this only to tribal lands?
No. I believe it's broader than that, Senator Ringo.
All classes of ratepayers.
Yes.
And shall domain, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, just to clarify, I don't
see the shall is on line 9. If the commission allows the recovery of any costs, the commission shall allow the recovery of those costs from all classes of ratepayers.
Madam Chair, I don't have the dash three amendments. Do they change the definition of a qualifying forest biomass project in line 7?
I don't know the answer to that question. Mr. Nelson, why don't you come on up?
It does. The answer is yes. Well, have them come up anyway.
I'm Chair of Members of the Committee. My name is Mark Nelson, representing Industrial Customers, Northwest Utilities. Dash 3 is the amendment that we thought we were going to compromise with. It would allow, the bill would apply to any qualifying forest biomass project using forest fuels. So not just the tribes, it would extend to any project.
I see. I mean, Madam Chair, I guess to me, this is a broader issue than it was before, and I would like to look at it a little closer.
Okay.
Originally, narrowly focused on the tribes, made me look at it differently.
Okay.
I would just appreciate the opportunity to look at this closer.
Perhaps that would be the wise course.
All right.
To reschedule this.
Okay, let's do that. And was there a motion on the floor? Did you move the dash?
Yes, there was.
Adam, I withdraw the motion.
Okay. Let's do that, and I understand that folks from Warm Springs are tied up today in other activities, so maybe we can bring this back later at another time. All right, so I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1082. We'll reschedule that bill for another day.
Oh, I know I am. Actually, I've
no. Senate Bill 1037. Are you ready on Senate Bill 1037? Senator Ringo.
Short answer is no.
But do you want to have Mr. Crean do a walkthrough at this point?
He's not here.
Okay. All right.
Have you done all the bills?
Yes, with the exception of 1074.
And we're not ready to do that.
I'm stewing over it.
Me too.
Well, I request that then we just can we recess for 10 minutes or
let's do that.
No more than 10.
Let's recess for 10 minutes. Possibly deal with Senate Bill 1074 and do a walkthrough of amendments on Senate Bill 1037. Commission is not even hearing, not even ready for a public walkthrough of the amendment, so we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1037, and that'll be probably put on Monday's agenda. That's that one. Senate Bill 1074, I think the parties are still working out numbers. So we're going to set that one over till Monday. At the rate we're going to be here till August, but that's okay. We have nothing else to do. And I think that concludes the business before the committee. Yes? Anything else to come before the committee?
No.
All right. Let's adjourn for the weekend. Everybody enjoy.